It's Thursday, November 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, glad you're with us. Coming up, Myanmar appears headed for political change. We find out more about a U.S. political frontrunner. The United Nations seeks a global climate consensus.
They eat styrofoam and they digest styrofoam in their gut. The process was very fast.
Scientists find a new way to break down a type of waste. Also ahead, a documentary explores the life of a football star off the field. It's all on today's International Edition. Myanmar President Thein Sein has congratulated opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi and her National League for Democracy Party, the NLD, for their apparent landslide victory in this week's parliamentary elections over the military-backed Union Solidarity and Development Party. The latest results from the country's Union Election Commissions show the NLD has claimed 179 out of 216 seats, or more than 80% of the results announced so far for the lower house of parliament. The NLD is also far ahead in the upper chamber of parliament, winning 77 of the 83 seats announced so far. VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman tells International Edition host Sarah Williams, it appears the transfer of power will be orderly.
There's little doubt now that the opposition NLD is heading towards a landslide victory. And what is more remarkable is that the government is now acknowledging that and reaching out to Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD and saying from the president's office directly that President Thein Sein will work for a peaceful transition of power. And the president apparently has also accepted Aung San Suu Kyi's request for a meeting on, quote, national reconciliation with the government and the army chief. And, of course, the military, very powerful in Myanmar, 25% of the seats in the parliament reserved for the military, as well as key ministries that remain in the hands of the military, no matter what happens with this election.
Has there been any statement since this from the government, from Aung San Suu Kyi?
We have not had a statement issued directly by her beyond the party officials at NLD headquarters releasing some details of this letter that came from the president in Naypyidaw. She has been fairly reserved in her comments since the election. She has told people not to cause trouble with celebrations, to wait for the results. She's instructed victorious politicians not to give interviews and not even to post on social media. Everyone seems to be waiting until these results are official from the Union Election Commission. There had been some concerns expressed by the NLD and some protests, especially about some of the advance votes, the absentee ballots. But regardless of what happens with those ballots, there's little doubt that overall for the parliamentary seats, it is going to be a landslide victory for the NLD.
And is there any indication yet as to when this vote counting process will conclude?
Well, it's coming out in dribs and drabs. A couple times a day, we're getting updates on the parliamentary seats. The UEC, the Election Commission, had said earlier that they would continue to release results through Sunday, which would be 1 week after the election. But I think within another day or two, we're going to see the official count take the NLD over the threshold of giving it an absolute majority in the parliament.
Among the parliamentary winners is Aung San Suu Kyi herself. She won re-election to her lower house seat. We turn now to our social media segment. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in the studio with me to bring us today's top news online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What do you have for us today?
Well, it's going to be a two-part segment in America's tipping culture. Jim, for our international listeners, can you tell us the average tipping rate here?
Well, I know if you enjoy the service that you've received, it had been about 15%. It's probably crept up a little bit from that at this point.
Definitely. So let's say four people went out to eat and the bill came out to be $100 in total and they decided to split evenly. If you tip at 20%, each person has to add $5 to the 20% they're paying for the meal. So no matter what the percentage, it can really add up. And of course, there are some mom-and-pop stores that don't accept tips, but that's really rare. I mean, I personally haven't been to a sit-down restaurant that doesn't accept tips. Have you?
Not really, no.
Yeah, that's why Wednesday's announcement by a national seafood chain is getting a lot of attention on Facebook. Joe's Crab Shake is the first major chain restaurant to drop tipping for servers. So instead of getting tips, the servers will be paid a starting wage of $14 per hour. That's a bit higher than the average wage.
Okay, well, is that applicable to all of its stores?
That's the plan in the long run, but it's starting with stores in participating markets only. They include Indianapolis, Omaha, St. Louis, and Pittsburgh. There's one catch, though. Joe's menu prices are increasing 12 to 15% as part of the move.
It doesn't seem like that's a lot compared to the average tipping rate, isn't it?
Exactly. Jim, I'm glad you mentioned the average tipping rate because tipping isn't necessary. So, well, it's necessary, but it's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. So some people apparently don't tip at all. And that's where our next story is about. A couple in Centerville, Ohio is in the hot seat for not tipping and writing a not very kind note to the waitress. Mm. It started with the waitress posting a picture of the copy of the receipt that showed a big fat zero in the tip section and this comment: "He is my husband. Find your own. Good luck." And she even wrote smiley face. The customer felt the waitress is flirting with her husband, so penalized her by not leaving any tip. The waitress then posted a picture of the receipt and wrote some scathing things about the customer's behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, that Facebook post has since been deleted, but it's already been covered by many media outlets. So, as you can tell, the tipping culture can be conducive to drama sometimes, Jim.
Absolutely. Well, we give you definitely a big smiley face for that update, G.
Thank you.
Our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, she's on Twitter at G. Abby Lee, and she also tweets from our program's account. That would be at VOA underscore IE. You can find me out there as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Republican presidential candidates expressed support for strengthening U.S. borders as they debated late Tuesday on immigration, the economy, and the country's place in the world. But they had some different opinions on about what to do with the millions of illegal immigrants already living in the country. A new poll prior to the debate showed neurosurgeon Ben Carson was leading with 24%, billionaire Donald Trump just behind at 23%, and then there's Florida Senator Marco Rubio, a distant third with 12%. With Dr. Carson still high in the polls, we're joined by Emily Cadet, political correspondent for Newsweek, to tell us more about who Ben Carson is.
Dr. Carson had a long career in medicine that hadn't really been explored too much so far in the presidential discussion, and as he's really surged in the polls, obviously I'm not the only one. There's a lot of us who are now suddenly a lot more interested in Dr. Carson, his story, his background, because with the lack of political experience that he's had, it makes his personal experience, his personal story, his experience as a doctor all that much more relevant in sort of trying to parse out who this guy is and what sort of qualities he would bring to the White House. So that's what I was interested in doing, was talking to people who worked with him at Johns Hopkins, who knew him from his time in Baltimore, to get a better sense of what he was like in those days, and also just how they reconcile this doctor, who was very well-known and well-respected in his field and in the community there, with a figure that they see on the campaign trail who's a little bit more controversial, both in terms of some of the things he said and also being sort of heavily partisan. It's a very different role for him.
What are some of these things that you have found in speaking with his former colleagues?
Well, it's interesting. I wasn't sure what to expect. I knew he was regarded very highly for his medical skills as a neurosurgeon, a pediatric neurosurgeon. But one of the things that people talked about a lot when I spoke with them was his people skills and how he's wonderful both with children, which is most of the patients he had were very young, and he was working on some pretty intractable problems these kids were facing. And it's important to have a good rapport with little kids who are, you know, you're working with as a doctor. But they also said he worked really well with other doctors, with other professionals and specialists. That's important, I think, in the medical field, just because they're all trying to work together, but there's a lot of pressure and a lot of ego. It sounded like he had a really good human touch, essentially.
Do you have a sense of how perhaps this narrative that he's developed over the years correlates with what he is saying now?
Yeah, it's certainly a storyline that's important to his identity, how he came up from nothing, basically, in Detroit and Boston, sort of living in poverty, but being very focused on his education and persevering, that he was able to work his way up through the Ivy League to this very prestigious medical center at Johns Hopkins and a very prestigious career. So I think that it informs a lot of his outlook on the role of government and his belief that it's really about taking your own initiative rather than taking government handouts. He never wanted, for example, any special treatment because of his ethnicity, because he was a minority. He just very much rejected those sort of race quotas or special treatment, those types of things. And I think it's because he felt like he was able to do it and other people should be able to do it.
Were there any other aspects of his life that you didn't know about that you uncovered during your discussions with others?
The one thing I learned that people really struggled with who know him well from his past life was they were having a hard time with some of the things he said about other religious groups, other types of people like homosexuals. I mean, some of the stuff that's come out that's been more divisive on social issues, I think, is where they were surprised that they didn't think that that was reflective of the way he'd always behaved as a doctor.
Emily Cadet is a political correspondent for Newsweek. Her article is titled Carson's Journey, Pioneering Neurosurgeon, Presidential Candidate. You can find out more by reading the article. Emily, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, officials from around the world are actively preparing for the two-week United Nations Climate Change Conference in France. That's next month. They hope to reach a universally legal binding agreement on limiting carbon emissions after two decades of negotiations. The so-called greenhouse gases are blamed for global warming and its harmful effects on human existence. Slonica Hoke reports that climate was high on the agenda in the United States as well as in France on Tuesday.
French environmentalists demonstrated against the construction of a new airport in western France outside the venue where the government hosted a pre-climate conference meeting. Some protesters said France should follow the example of U.S. President Barack Obama, who ruled out the Keystone Pipeline project last week, citing environmental concerns.
We are here to ask France and President Hollande to do the same with the Notre Dame de Londres project.
French leaders hosted a three-day meeting with officials from about 60 countries to find possible compromises for a climate deal. One of the toughest issues has been financing developing countries to help them develop sustainable energy sources.
Africa is endowed with huge renewable energy sources and potential. We need to harness this potential as quickly as possible. In the coming 10 years, Africa has to universally electrify all its rural areas, and that makes to create decent jobs to Africans. That also helps to curb migration to Europe and elsewhere.
Opponents of President Obama's plan to reduce power plant carbon emissions say the measures would kill coal mining jobs and increase energy costs. Slarissa Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate,
or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
It's a bit unclear how long it takes polystyrene-based products like styrofoam to decompose. But no matter if it's 500 years or 5,000, it's a pretty long time in human terms, and it illustrates the scope of the problem that we're creating every time we use disposable plastics. Scientists, though, say they may have discovered an unusual way to break down this plastic garbage. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
It takes hundreds of years to biodegrade styrofoam. And those plastic plates, cups, and containers currently take up between 25 and 30% of our landfill space. But these little guys might be able to fix the problem by literally munching the plastic away. It turns out mealworms have a taste for styrofoam.
The mealworm, they eat styrofoam and they digest styrofoam in their gut. The process was very fast. In less than 24 hours, it became CO2.
Each worm can digest plastic waste about the size of a pill every day. Special enzymes in their gut break down the styrofoam.
The secreted enzymes are really interesting. Those are the tools that actually break the wall down into little pieces.
Researchers are trying to develop enzymes that mimic the worm's ability to break down plastic waste.
It's an issue because we're running out of landfill space, for one thing, especially in dense urban environments. Also, the clutter that results, particularly on the ocean. Everyone hears about that, but all around the world.
Surprisingly, environmental scientists found mealworms chomping on styrofoam were just as healthy as those that ate their normal diet of bran. Jessica Berman, VOA News.
He has won the FIFA Player of the Year award 3 times. He has won the Golden Boot as European soccer's top scorer 4 times, and he has legions of adoring fans. Now a new documentary looks at his life off the field. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at Ronaldo, which looks at the life of Portuguese national and Real Madrid star Cristiano Ronaldo.
There's no arguing with Cristiano Ronaldo's skills on the football field. This year, the 30-year-old became Real Madrid's all-time leading scorer with 324 career goals. He scored 48 goals in 35 Spanish League games to win the Golden Boot for the 4th time. No other player has 4 of the scoring awards. He has won the Golden Ball as FIFA's Player of the Year 3 times and is nominated for a 4th trophy this year. But in a new documentary, Ronaldo, director Anthony Fonca takes fans behind the public sportsman to give us a glimpse of Ronaldo's life off the field. The documentary combines archival highlights with film shot over 14 months to give a look at the football star's life, particularly with his family. Cristiano Ronaldo says that he was able to relax in front of the camera, and it shows in the movie.
When I speak with the guys from Universal, they plan to do it like 3 days of filming, but I'm just feeling so comfortable and good chemistry with the director and Anthony and Paul that the thing is coming in a natural way. So in a movie that you're going to have opportunity to see that we have very intense moments, very private moments, because I was enjoying to do it, the filming. So I think the last result, I think it's great. You're going to have opportunity to see it was unbelievable.
Director Anthony Fonca says that he was surprised by the quiet life that one of the world's top football players lives off the field.
He lives actually a relatively, you know, strict life. You know, comes home and trains and sleeps and does that. It's no mad partying, or, you know, it's and so that was a surprise. His ability to deal with pressure is actually, that's fascinating. You know, he has this, he loves it, you know, and he thrives on it. And that was for me, was fascinating.
Winning, That's the most important to me. It's as simple as that.
Ronaldo's agent Jorge Mendes said at the London premiere that the film gives fans a chance to know Cristiano the man instead of Cristiano the football star.
I think that now you have a chance to know better Cristiano. And almost of the people, I think that you don't know really who is Cristiano. Everybody knows Cristiano as a player, but as a father and out of the pitch is really, I think that you should see the movie.
Nothing is impossible, my friend.
I have what I have because I sacrifice a lot.
Tudo que tenho, dedico ao futebol.
Some people hate me, some people love me. Fui feito para ser o melhor.
Ronaldo is produced by the same team that released documentaries on Formula One racing champion, the late Ayrton Senna of Brazil, and the late British pop singer Amy Winehouse. It is rated PG-13 and is in theaters now. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always at our website, voanews.com, and you can also find us on a variety of other outlets to listen to. Twitter is at @VOA_IE. We hope you follow us there as well. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
During the American Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln called on his countrymen in his famous Gettysburg Address to ensure that liberty shall not perish from the earth. His words have inspired many over the years, including millions in our nation's armed forces, who fought to preserve not only America's freedom, but that of other nations as well. Today, Veterans Day, America pauses to honor these men and women and the values of duty and sacrifice they represent. Long after they leave uniform, they symbolize what it means to be a citizen of a free land. The holiday, observed every year on November 11th, originated with the armistice that ended the First World War in 1918. The conflict, fought in Asia, Africa, scattered islands in the Pacific, and the waters off South America, as well as on the battlefields of Europe, was seen as the war to end all wars. But other wars followed, and in 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower expanded the holiday to honor all who have served in uniform, both in war and peace. Our government continues this effort to this day, with programs to help veterans leaving the military to find employment and ease their transition into civilian life. Honoring this sacred trust with America's veterans means doing all we can to help them find work when they come home, so they never feel as if the American dream they fought to defend is out of reach for them or their families, President Barack Obama said. At its core, though, Veterans Day isn't about war. It commemorates no battlefield victory or defeat. It celebrates no advancement of political or territorial ambition. Rather, it's a day of remembrance, echoing similar holidays in Great Britain, Canada, South Africa, and other nations that honor military veterans for their service and sacrifice.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.